Our study tonight is out of 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 4 through 10a, God's judgment of and deliverance from false teachers. Before the Apostle Peter began to minister for the Lord, the church's outlook was impacted by Christ's prophecy in John 21, 18 and 19 that he'd be crucified for Christ. So eternity was thus often on Peter's mind, as indeed it should be on ours as well, because that's our destiny. In accord with this theme, 2 Peter 2, 4 to 10a presents Peter's encouragement that God was willing and able to judge false teachers and deliver godly believers from false teachers so believers could be confident that they could overcome error after Peter had passed. You'll remember back in 2 Peter 1, 14 to 21, Peter was concerned about the church remaining true to the Lord and true to the word, the truth of God's word after his passing. He knew that he said he would be laying down his tabernacle, his earthly body, as per the Lord's request. But he was concerned about the people who would survive him. So we view this passage for our insider application and edification. I want to read the passage, and then we'll look at it. 2 Peter 2, 4 through 10a. For if God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to Tartarus, we'll look into that word in a little bit, and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment, and spared not the old world, but saved Noah, the eighth person, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood upon the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them with an overthrow, making them an ensample unto those that should afterwards live ungodly lives, and delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy manner of life of the wicked, for that righteous man dwelling among them and seeing and hearing vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. The Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished, but chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise government. Okay, God is able and willing to punish the most formidable of false teachers we face. That's verses 4 through 10a. God is willing and able to judge the most powerful of false teachers that we face. 2 Peter 2, 4 to 9 is actually one long sentence, one of the longest sentences in the New Testament. The protasis, or the if clause, runs from verse 4 to the end of verse 8. And the apotasis, or the then clause, comprises verse 9. Accordingly, in 2 Peter 2, 4, Peter wrote that God did not spare the powerful angels that sinned in Satan's fall before the creation of the universe. That's recorded in Ezekiel 28, 14 and 15. But he cast them down to gloomy dungeons. I know that King James says hell, but actually the Greek word is Tartarao, and it's translated as Tartarus. Tartarus was known by the Greeks as a place that was actually below Hades, and as a place of tremendous gloom and darkness, and it was like a dungeon. And so these spirits are actually held. This may actually be the bottomless pit that is referred to in the book of Revelation. I don't know, but they're held. These angels were so wicked that God did not want the human race exposed to them. It would have been too devastating for us. So these very godless and very powerful demons are actually held in a holding place, and God is able to handle them. He's certainly able to handle the most powerful false teachers that we face. So God is willing and able to punish most powerful of false teachers. God is willing and able to punish the largest number, the most corrupt, and the most violent false teachers as well. In 2 Peter 2, verse 5, with 9b, Peter wrote of God's not sparing the whole world of people in Noah's day for its sin. And we believe because the antediluvian, or the pre-flood people, lived into their 900s. Or 800s, as the case may be, that the population probably was billions of people like it is today. It wasn't just, 10 or 15,000 people. The world was full of people because longevity coupled with normal human reproduction would cause the population to explode. So this world was full of it. In fact, they have discovered footprints, bear footprints, all over the world that were made in soft, like clay, and we believe that happened at the flood. The flood, there was a lot of explosions of the fountains of the deep that were thrown up, and there was a lot of mud that was spewed about, and people were trying to get away from these things, and they were going. And it's interesting, all the footprints are going in one direction. Some of the footprints are the size of children's feet. Some are feet that we have. They've actually found some feet that are actually 2 feet long in Glen Rose, Texas, and it was huge. It was a giant. The giant probably was about 14 or 15 feet high, going with feet that size. But anyway, Tartarus was this place where they were cast. But God is able to destroy this, the number, the largest number, and the most corrupt, the most violent false teachers because of what he did at the flood. God did not spare the entire world of people in Noah's day for its sin. And Genesis 6, 11, and 12 states that the entire antediluvian world was very corrupt and very violent. And God's destroying it was likely necessary in order to preserve the human race from eventually destroying it itself. See, Noah was righteous in his generation. And if God had waited another generation or two, probably even Noah's seed would have become corrupt. And at that point, you know, the whole human race would have to be destroyed. So the Lord is willing, and he's able to punish the largest number, the most corrupt, and the most violent of false teachers that God's people will face in church history. Also, God is willing and able to punish the most vexingly evil false teachers that we face. The Lord destroyed the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, sending fire and brimstone down from heaven to turn those cities into ashes as an example of his judgment on such ungodly people. We know from Genesis 19, 4-5, that these cities were given over to sexually perverse wickedness, and Abram's nephew, righteous Lot, was very tormented in living among such people. It makes you wonder why he stayed there so long, but it troubled him deeply at the wickedness of these people. But so the Lord is very willing and able to punish the most vexingly evil false teachers that we face as well. But not only is God willing to judge false teachers, he's also able and willing, and this is for us, to deliver the righteous from the most formidable of false teachers. That's verses 4 through 10a. God spared the world from exposure to the extremely powerful, wicked fallen angels by confining them to gloomy dungeons until they would be cast into the lake of fire in Revelation 20:10. So he's able and willing to deliver his godly ones from the most powerfully evil false teachers. God spared Noah and his wife, his sons and his sons' wives in the ark from the whole world of corrupt, violent people. So he is able and willing to deliver his godly ones from the greatest number of corrupt, violent, false teachers they may face. And then God spared Lot and his family from the most vexingly evil kind of sinners in Lot's day. So God is able and willing to deliver his godly ones from those vexingly evil kind of false teachers today. It's amazing. Peter selected these illustrations and he indicated if God could do that in the past, what can he do now? And he chose illustrations of very wicked people, many wicked people, vexingly wicked people, powerful wicked people, and he showed how he delivered people from them. So, Peter added that this divine judgment of false teachers and his deliverance of the godly from them is especially true of those who follow the corrupt desire of the flesh and despise authority. That's why we read verse 10a. These teachers were probably not yet fully developed Gnostic heretics, but they possessed later Gnostic traits of lawlessness and licentiousness. Dr. Donald Guthrie from England has one of the top New Testament introductions, and he pointed out that these were probably not Gnostic heretics yet. They were getting there. But the Gnostic heretics, they believed the body was essentially evil, so you could indulge all of the lusts of the body. There was no problem with it. whereas the spirit was righteous. But the Gnostics, because they believed the body was evil, they thought it was impossible for Jesus, being God, to be in a literal flesh. So they denied the incarnation. Of course, deny the incarnation, you have to deny the cross, because Christ had to die for us and have to shed his blood and his body and died physically so we could have resurrection physically. So the early church was very, very strongly opposed to the Gnostic heretics. And so this is very important, but he's especially going after those who follow the corrupt desire of the flesh and despise authority. So due to his past record of dealing with formidable evil parties in the biblical past, reveals that God is willing and able to judge the worst false teachers the godly will face in church history. God's deliverance of the world before Noah, Noah and his family, and Lot and his family from such formidable evil parties shows God is willing and able to deliver the godly from similarly formidable false teachers throughout church history. So may we rest assured that God is able and willing to judge all the false teachers we face, and that he is just as willing and able to deliver us from their error and the effects of their errors as we trust in God for his help. You know, when you see what's coming on the horizon, what the church is facing, what Christians are facing on the horizon, even today, I think, you know, after my time, if the Lord should tarry, what in the world is the next generation or the two generations from now going to be able to do? Well, we have this promise here. God is able to help them because of what he's done in the past. And the record of God in the past is really remarkable. So God can really help us today. And I remember when I was struggling with this, the Calvinist Arminian thing, I was going through the throes of, went through the throes of that for about 20 years, wondering how in the world to make sense of it. And then when the Lord revealed, he revealed that paganism was behind it, Stoicism was behind Arminianism, Neoplatonism was behind the Calvinism and the Augustinian view. And when that happened, and I saw it, everything became crystal clear, and the Lord helped. But it's interesting, he used a book that Jonathan Banker, who was a missionary that we had supported for some time, and Jonathan Banker used to be here at Nepok Church. He was a classmate, incidentally, of Mike Terwilliger's at Farmington High School many years ago. But he left a book on Calvin and Augustine up in the church library. And it's when I came to that book, I found the information that I needed, and God blessed. So God can help, and he will provide the protection that we need. All we need to do is to trust the Lord, and he'll help.